morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. I'm Irene Watson. I am the managing editor for Reader Views, and I am in Austin, Texas.
And I'm Victor Volkman from Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's November 8th, 2007, and welcome to episode number 50 in our series. Tonight's topic is writing for teens and young adults, and our special guest who will be joining us this hour is Joe Whittemore. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Please send us your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Sometime between last week's and this week's show, Authors Access had its first anniversary of being on the air. I want to take this opportunity to thank all the guests, past and present, who have generously shared their time and made this thing possible. Our hats are off to you. Now, tonight, we're speaking with novelist Joe Whittemore. At the age of 30, she has exceeded a goal she set for herself as a child, to publish a novel. She is now the author of three novels, Escape from Errolon, Curse of Aristol, and Onaja's Horn. Joe has been a member of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators since 2003 and is one of the founding members of Authors Supporting Intellectual Freedom. She has been featured in national magazines For Me, East West, and Audrey, as well as several Texas publications. Joe is represented by the Andrea Brown Literary Agency and lives in Austin, Texas, with her husband, Roger. Good evening, Joe.
Good evening.
Well, I'm so glad to have you here. It's great to have somebody else online from Austin.
Yes, it is. That's very nice. It's very good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I just want to talk, first of all, about writing for teens and young adults. That's always such a vague area, it seems, and they're not kids, they're not adults, and there they are, sort of that in-between, and I want to talk about that. How do you write for these teens and young adults? What is the difference between, you know, the little kid stuff and for the adult stuff?
Sure. Well, there are a number of different factors, because you're trying to write for an age group that is just starting to get a sense of identity, a sense of self, and they're starting to develop their own opinions about everything. And so you have to make sure that you're taking all this into account, because when you're writing for a younger audience, they're more likely to gloss over things that might not seem true to them, whereas if you're writing for young adults and teens, they're more likely to point out or notice flaws that are different from what they're used to. So it's very careful, and I actually have a set of rules that I try and follow whenever I write young adult and teen fiction to try and make sure I try and keep it as real for them as possible.
So tell us about these rules.
Okay. Well, the first and foremost rule is don't make the work about you, because that would be an autobiography, first of all. But second of all, it's not something where you can relive. It's not for you to relive your teen years and make yourself the hero and write about things like that. They'll know that you're not writing a true character. They'll know that something's a little bit off with that character. You need to not preach to them when you're writing to them. That's another one, don't preach. And I don't mean you can't have any morals happen, but it needs to be something that's worked in very subtly. You can't have, you see, this is what happens when you drink. This is what happens when you smoke, and those sort of things. You also can't speak down to this audience, and this isn't meaning the same thing as preaching. Speaking down is when you're making things really simple for them, because you're not trusting them to be able to figure out something by themselves. You need to let them figure it out instead of just saying, aha, so the killer did this for this reason. You need to let them deduce that on their own. They're getting to the point where they can understand those things and take care of them themselves. You also need to know your limits, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later. There are certain limits that you can reach. There's a certain envelope you can push in teen fiction with language and with sexual situations and with drug use and bringing up these topics. And it's important to know your limits, and like I said, I will address those a little bit later. You also don't want to make things easy in these books, because that is so unrealistic for teens. They know nothing happens easy for them. There can't be simple solutions to problems. Things don't fix themselves very easily. It all has to be, it has to make sense. It has to be logical. It has to be complex for them to believe it. Also, you shouldn't use topical references unless it's necessary for the story. You want to try and avoid topicality, mainly know what's not hot and avoid that, because there are certain things, some words and some trends, will transcend generations. People still use the word cool, people still use the word awesome, but there are words groovy, things like that, from past generations that don't work nowadays. So it's not so much about plugging in what's hot now, because you want to make sure you're not dating your material as well. So it's not so much about making sure you're up with what's hot, it's making sure you're up with what's not. It's also important to know the lingo. Like I said, cool, awesome, people still say that. You want to try and stay away from catchphrases that identified a particular generation, such as, oh, behave, that was obviously Austin Powers sort of thing, and before that you had Mike Myers with not, and that was something that was for, you know, children of the early 90s. So unless you want to try and invent your own catchphrases in books, which is very cool because some people can actually get away with that, you want to try and avoid catchphrases that will date your material. You also need to know about the teen culture. You need to know what currently teens are into, what they're currently doing. You need to know their current interests. A lot of teens now are using PC, computer games, they're on the console games, they're on the internet. They're not doing the sort of things that teens did back, you know, when the authors who are writing these books were teens. They're totally different. You also need to know who your new antagonists are. You need to know who the bullies are. Bullies change over the years. They're still there, but they're different. Bullies have become smarter. It's not always going to be the mean girls that you see, the plastics, the blonde girls, the rich snobby girls. Sometimes the nerds can be the bullies. And those are some basic rules that are important to follow when you're writing for teens and young adults to keep it real for them.
Wow. Those are some really basic rules that, you know, being a review service, I so agree with you, because we do get a number of books that don't really follow the rules that you have just set out. And a lot of them are self-help. And what I'm finding, too, is some of these young kids, they don't want to read self-help books. They don't want to be preached to. They don't want to be told. And I get comments like, well, I didn't really like this book, but this is something my mother would want me to read.
Right, right.
And
it's all about letting them decide who they want to be, not about telling them this is who you have to be.
Exactly. And I'm sure that that same message could have been, you know, could come across in some way of, let's say, a fantasy, what you write, and still get the message across and in a way that the kids can appreciate it and will read it and take that in. Joe, one thing I want to ask you is, tell me, what age group are teen to young adult? There just seems to be so many ideas on what that group is. What is the age?
Right. Well, you have, at the very beginning of your adolescence, you have what are called tweens, and this is usually going to be your 10 to 13-year-olds. And these are the type of children that are they're starting to get into watching the MTV. They're a little bit into it. They're not quite into it yet because they're still reading some younger books, but they're also starting to read a little bit older for their age. And then you actually have what we would consider young adult, and that is when you're getting 14 and up. And those are your audience members that can handle the more grown-up situations, such as, you know, bringing in a little bit more coarse language and sexual situations and things like that.
That's good to know, because that's what we deal with, too, is that particular age group. And, you know, quite often we think of young adult being 8 later, 19, 20, 21. But as far as books go, it's really the 14 to, what, 17, something like that?
Right. Once kids hit high school, they're pretty much ready to start reading a little bit older. And so they're looking for that type of material. They're looking for situations that are a little bit more complex with their lives. So you can consider those. High school and up is young adult.
The other comment that I get from our teen reviewers is quite often they read a story and provide a review, and they say, well, the plot is very much like such and such book, and it's one of the current books. And how does an author actually, you know, find a plot that isn't already written?
That is a problem, because there is a theory that there are a limited amount of stories that you can tell. There's just different ways to tell the story. But it is true, there are some ideas that have been very played out, you know, such as the mean girls, like I mentioned. You have the rich, snobby mean girls, and everyone's seen that so many times. You have the ugly duckling story. Everyone's seen that so many times. The easy way to gauge what's being done so much, you have to read. You have to read the material that you're wanting to set the bar against. You have to know what else is out there, what's already been done so many times, what's currently working so you know, okay, I need to stay away from this topic. Everyone's already talked about it. That has been done and over again. So.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. Joe, in terms of writing contemporary stories, just for a minute, how do you integrate things like instant messages and text messages into the plot in ways that, you know, they don't seem artificial or they really belong in the story?
Well, with as technology is advancing, teens are also very quickly adopting to it. So to plug it into a story, it would not seem out of place nowadays. It would just seem like I picked up my cell phone and called so-and-so, and that fits right in because they get that. That's what they do every day. Or I got on the computer and I am'd my friend so-and-so. It's not so much about the technology trying to fit it in without making it seem awkward. It's putting things in there that you're not using dated things like I went into to ask Jeeves, things like that, like things that might not exist in the future. Obviously, instant messaging has come and it's here to stay. Cell phones are here. Kids are still going to be using those 10 years from now, but you want to make sure that you're not mentioning certain things, certain brands or certain terms that won't be understood in 10 years. People will go, what is this? What are they talking about? So
right.
Things like instant messaging and chatting online and things like that, they're very easy to integrate into a story simply because a lot of teens already do that. And so if they were to not see a character doing that, that might actually seem a little fishy to them, because you can read a story now that was written 10 years ago, and you can ask yourself, why didn't they just pick up the cell phone and call?
Exactly.
Drive to the pay phone.
Yeah.
So it makes sense nowadays, and kids would actually find it unusual if you didn't include those aspects. For instance, oh, how do I get a message to so-and-so in this other class? Oh, well, that's easy. Nowadays, I would just send them an IM, or I would just get in a chat room with them and send them something.
Great. That makes complete sense. I want to ask you a little bit about marketing. Are you trying to approach the parents, the teenagers themselves, or library buyers, or how exactly do you market this sort of genre?
Well, you can actually approach the marketing from several different angles, because you can appeal to the different groups. Whenever you're appealing to the teens, usually you want to appeal to their sense of where they're at right now. Like, you want to describe situations in ways that they can relate to, like, oh, this is a certain dilemma so-and-so's dealing with, and, oh, there's this hot guy, and you want to say things that they'll relate to. Whereas when you're dealing with a parent, you want to approach it from a little bit different angle and say, you know, this is the social dilemma so-and-so is having, and you still want it to appeal. You want to maybe tone down, oh, the hot guy, and she's sleeping around, those kind of things. You want to tone those down. You want to still draw out the important aspects of the story, though, and then pretty much the same for libraries and schools. You want to tone down a little bit of what might be seen as a little risque or might keep you from getting into those places. You want to beef up the good things, the good aspects of the story, what sort of lessons the characters are going to learn, and how this can appeal to the current children at their schools and how they can be helped with their personal problems that they're having.
Great. So what kind of resources are available if I'm, you know, interested in developing a book for this market?
If you're interested, the best thing to do, really, I think, is to get into the mindset of a teen. There are certain resources like the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, and I highly recommend joining that for anyone who wants to write for teens and for young adults. But there are also ways that personally, to gain experience, just from personal experience, something a writer can do. And there's so many things that teens use that are easily accessible to adults as well. Magazines. You can look at Girls Live. You can look at Teen Vogue. You can look at Cosmo Teen and Read 17. Read all these magazines. Look at the ads. What are the problems that the ads are trying to address? All of these usually have Ask So-and-So or Dear Abby type question sections where the teens are actually describing the problems they're facing. So, you know, okay, these are realistic teen dilemmas that I'm writing about. Or, oh, here's an idea for a teen dilemma that I could write about. You also get ideas for the clothing, for what they're wearing, for the fashion, what's important to them. You see advertisements for bands, for books, for movies, things that are going to appeal to those teens, and you get a little bit of a better idea of what they like. You can also turn to television. There are certain shows that teens enjoy watching, and you can watch them and try and pick up what exactly about the show appeals to them. You have a really popular one right now is a show called Hannah Montana, about this girl who has an alternate identity. She's a regular teenager, high school teenager, but she also has a secret identity of being a rock star. and teens like that because they like the concept of being someone different than who they are occasionally. You have shows like Degrassi, which is, it's been around for quite a while. The generations change, but they always have difficult, complex situations that a lot of people don't like to talk about, but that teens actually face, or they know someone who's faced it, something like cutting and other suicide attempts and things like that. And you have shows like The Hills, which is reality television. It's set in more of a posh lifestyle, and you get the idea, you know, from the audience that likes to watch that, oh, this is the way I would like to live. I'm emulating this type of style. These channels, Disney, Nickelodeon, MTV, Cartoon Network, Fox, the CW, these are all channels that teens watch. And they also watch the basic network channels, but these are the ones that when they pull teens, these are the main ones that they watch. You also have video games.
Right.
And video games, like I said, are popular right now. World of Warcraft is insanely popular with the younger generations, boys and girls. Halo, they're on a Halo 3 right now, and Halo 3 is a Xbox game. You have Half-Life, and that just came out with a new version. And, of course, you have Guitar Hero, which they actually have Guitar Hero tournaments and things like that. And so you can see from these video games, for the people that, you know, World of Warcraft appeals to them, it's a role-playing game. You get to be someone else. You get to have access to things you might not normally have. You can cast magic, things like that. Also movies. You can check out what kids are enjoying about the movies, what's making them laugh. A really popular teen movie is Superbad, and it's a really funny movie, but it stars these awkward teens, and a lot of kids relate to that because they are in that awkward stage. You can also look at the clothes they're buying. Popular brands right now, Hollister, Abercrombie, Aeropostale, PacSun, things like that. It gives you a sense of what they want to be. A lot of those, Hollister, PacSun, those are West Coast brands. And there's other ones like that are popular right now. And so it's showing a trend, you know, oh, the West Coast teen thing is kind of cool. That's why you have shows like The Hills and things like that. And then, of course, books. Books help you identify what teens are into. Of course, J.K. Rowling's really popular. Stephanie Meyer, she writes a series about vampires and a girl that's in love with a vampire. Scott Westerfeld, he writes several different series of books. All of these books tend to focus more towards the fantastical element, which is what I prefer, so I apologize. There's contemporary ones out there that are good as well, but I focus more on fantastical. And then, of course, YouTube and MySpace and things like that. If you're looking at all these different resources, you can glean so much information about teens and what they're interested in and what is important to them at this moment.
Well, that's certainly some great ideas to just when you're writing for the teens, basically, you really need to know exactly what type of a life, what's going on in their lives,
yeah,
and what they,
yeah,
do like. I've noticed that recently a lot of the books, and these are from some major publishers, so on, are coming in that for teens and young adults, and I guess we're talking about 14, 15-year, 16-year-olds, that have a lot of sexual content in them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot about same-sex relationships. There's a lot of swearing in the books. Also, a mother of a 14-year-old reviewer that we have sent back a book because she was just appalled. In the book, there was some masturbating going on. This is actually an award-winning book. And so it's like I'm in this place. I don't know. I don't have teens that age. And as I look at these books, I'm just finding it very confusing for myself because, you know, with 14-year-olds, is this really, obviously it's written for them, and yet I have a mother that's reacting.
Sure.
So just give us a little information on that. A little eye-opening.
And actually, because one of the groups I belong to is Authors Supporting Intellectual Freedom, and we fight situations where books are being censored for things that are really not out of the ordinary for teen lit. But it is important to know when to say when you're writing teen fiction. The first thing you have to ask yourself is, why are you including this? Why are you including these curse words? Why are you including drug references, sexual situations, things like that? There needs to be a good reason, obviously, for these to be included. If you're including it to make the book more authentic, that's great, because, yeah, there are a lot of teens that are in sexual situations or start smoking and things like that in high school. If you're doing it to make the book just seem edgy, that's a little bit cautionary. You need to be careful because when you're getting to that point, you run the risk of people buying your book for the wrong reason. You run the risk of teens checking out your book for the wrong reason, because there's a masturbation reference or something like that. So you need to be careful when you're doing these things that you're doing it for the right reason. You could also be doing it maybe for character development. Maybe this particular character you have, he's a bad boy, he curses a lot, he smokes, and that's possible. But whatever you're doing, you need to make sure you're doing it for the right reason, because it will keep you from getting into schools and libraries a lot of times, and it's a bad thing. If you keep it at a medium level, you can usually get away with it, but if it's something where it's very offensive, there's curse words every couple words, if it's just gratuitous, then you will definitely not make it into schools and libraries, because parents are going to see these books, like you said, the parent of the 14-year-old, they're going to see these books and go, you know, this is not going to happen. I'm not ready for my kid to know about this yet. You also risk offending your audience. So you also risk offending the teens, because there are teens out there. Most of the teens that are reading these books aren't teens that are super sexually active and into drugs and into smoking and cursing like sailors. And if they see this, and if your books have this extreme amount of these things, they're going to say, that is not me. I am not like that. No one I know is like that. This isn't real. And so that you have to be careful with that, too. So everything in moderation. Obviously, it's completely unrealistic if you're writing for the teens, young adults, if you're writing for 17, 18, you don't have any cursing, no one smokes, no one drinks, no one does anything bad. Obviously, that's very unrealistic. But at the opposite end of the spectrum, you don't need to have someone, every character sleeps around, has 500 boyfriends, every character sells and experiments with drugs, et cetera, things like that, because then you lose your audience because they can't relate to these characters. They haven't accidentally gone to a party and gotten a little too drunk. They haven't, you know, they can relate to. They can't relate to selling drugs on the street.
Wow. Yeah, that certainly makes sense. And so I'm also under the understanding that kids like to read about characters that just maybe a year or two older than themselves. So like a 12-year-old really prefers to read about a 14-year-old, 14 about, you know, of a 16, 17-year-old.
Right. That's where you can have, that's why I say you can classify young adult as even as young as 14, because when you're 14, you're not wanting to read those younger, the middle grade books. You're not wanting to read those anymore. You feel you've reached a maturity level. You're starting to identify yourself. You're starting to form your own opinions. You're starting to feel like you're a little bit more mature. You want people to think that you're older. You want them to trust you, et cetera, et cetera. And so they do start going for those older books. They start going a little bit older. And there are even in the middle grades, you have tweens that are also going for young adult books, because there are some, you know, nowadays there are so many tweens that they're precocious, they're ready, they're smart, they're eager to learn, they're eager to know more. And in those situations, that's also why there comes the problem with the censorship, because you're finding younger audiences, middle grade audiences, reaching for these books. These books are in the libraries and things like that, and the librarian doesn't know that these books have made it in there. They're letting the kids read the book, and then they're surprised when a parent says, hey, this book has such and such reference. The librarians need to screen the books before they make it in, and then, you know, just put the warning on the book, whatever, this has such and such situation. And that'll make it okay. Because there are some middle grade kids, there are some tweens that can handle those kind of books, but there are some that can't. And it needs to be something where the librarian screens the books before they come in so she can make that known for the readers. Hey, maybe you're not, you know, she knows her readers, maybe you're not quite ready for this yet.
Right, yeah, that makes complete sense. Joe, in terms of writing a series, are there things that you would approach writing a series of books for young adults differently than you might otherwise?
For young adults, series actually is very positive for young adults, because they like to see the continuing adventures of one particular character or a couple particular characters. They like to see how those characters develop. And what's very important about in these books is that you need to keep the characters constantly changing. They need to keep growing through the books. And I don't mean just physically. I mean mentally, emotionally. They need to keep growing. But you can't put them so far outside of the natural growth. In other words, you can't have this good character, this good-hearted character, and suddenly they turn evil. There has to be a logical progression. There has to be a reason they did such and such thing. So they want to see the characters change, but they don't want to see them change too much, because, again, you reach something a little bit unbelievable, and they say, that would never happen. I would never do that. A lot of times, these kids are relating to the characters, seeing themselves in these characters, and when you do something like that, if you do a drastic change to character growth, then they get a little bit, leery of the book, and they don't appreciate it as much. You also need, with teens, you need to be introducing new situations, new scenes, new locations, new characters, things like that, because you can't write about the same things over and over again. For younger audience, that's okay. They love repetition. If you've ever had a little kid ask you to read a picture book?
The same
one you've read them 20 times? You understand, they are fine with the repetition, but teens are not fine with the repetition. They like the same characters, but they want the characters to be in different situations. They want the location to change. They want new characters to be added. They want something different. They want a little bit different with each new book, and so you need to make sure you're also mixing it up a little bit as you're writing as well. And then also, you need to be checking for consistencies. That's very important because, as I said, these kids are more likely to notice inconsistencies. So if you have something in one book that suddenly doesn't exist in another book or suddenly can't be explained or you can't reference back to the previous book, they're going to notice that. They're going to say, well, why don't you just do what you did in book one? Why don't they do something like that? Younger audiences probably wouldn't notice the inconsistency. They would just accept it for what it was. So you need to be careful. Your new audience, your young adult audience is going to be a lot smarter, a lot wiser. They're going to be noticing a lot of stuff that your younger audience won't catch.
Right. Joe, I was thinking that young adults kind of like to live in a world of their own. And is it possible to integrate adult characters like the stepmother or the younger sister in a way that would be interesting to them? Or is there any difficulty with that?
Oh, no, it is, absolutely. I mean, obviously you can't have that be the hero of the story, but you can have these mentors, and they can, you know, unfortunately they usually are even the antagonists, you know, the evil parents, the evil guardian, things like that, and that does happen. But on the good side, you can have such as, for lack of a better example, Harry Potter, things like that. You have this mentor in Dumbledore, and you can have these wise, because obviously your character needs someone to guide them. And who better to turn to than someone who's a little bit older, or who can give them an adult point of view or let them see things a little bit differently than they might with a teen mind. And so when you have contemporary, maybe you have a teacher that the kid trusts, that the teacher points out, you know, why don't you think of it this way? And then that's something where you can introduce, oh, yeah, I didn't think of it that way, to the child, to the teen, because they're thinking along a certain line. These mentors can help them and educate them. And a lot of times teens end up falling in love with the mentors, with the adult characters as well. They think, oh, I love such and such. He's so funny. He's so nice. I would love him as my uncle, you know, my father, whatever, what have you.
Right. Yeah, that sounds like a great approach. I was just thinking, you know, when I was growing up, I really liked, there were only a few stories of young adults in science fiction. I imagine there's a lot of young adult romance. Are there anything specific to the different genres that you should be aware of as a writer?
With a lot of the genres nowadays, you're actually getting cross-genre. So there's a lot of stuff that you can meld. For instance, you're getting a lot of fantasy romance, which is what you have when you have Stephanie Meyer books, which you have Twilight Eclipse, and New Moon, things like that, where you have, it's a romance about vampires and things like that. And you also have others where you're blending mystery and fantasy, or you're blending mystery and romance. The lines get a little bit blurred, and I love it because it leaves it open for people that write fantasy. Now you can add other things to the fantasy. You can add mystery. You can add romance. And people don't say, but you're just a fantasy writer. They say, oh, this is great. She's crossing genres. She's transcending. And it's great because that is what teens are looking for. They aren't just looking strictly for just contemporary realistic. They're looking for maybe contemporary realistic romance, contemporary realistic mystery, or they're looking for fantasy romance, fantasy mystery. And that is great that minds are becoming open to those, to different genres. So in regards to being careful in one particular genre or another, I'd say it's open now. You can cross genres as long as you keep it consistent throughout your story. For instance, you can't just have a little bit of romance in the beginning of your fantasy and not expect the readers to want to see the rest of the romance play out throughout the book. So
right.
If you do introduce a new genre, the new genre needs to coincide with your existing genre throughout the entire book. But other than that, that's really the only guideline, I would say.
And we've noticed the cross genres, and it's really it's neat to have the cross genres for these kids. Now, you had mentioned earlier, Joe, about the importance of the flow of the book and everything. It just brought to mind our 14-year-old reviewer, and not the one that I had spoken about earlier, but a different one. She sent in a review. She loved the book. She loved the storyline. The characters had great development, but she made the comment for the author to correct the typos and work on the grammar. And I found that really interesting.
Yeah, like I said, this audience is smarter.
Uh-huh.
They notice things. And there are some things like that that unfortunately don't make it through copy edits. I've seen some authors, they when they as soon as they see their brand new book for the first time, then you know they've got that new book giddiness, and then they're leafing through it and they find a typo, and no, you know, they just kind of drop to their knees and rip their shirt in two. And but it happens. It happens to everyone. There's not a way to avoid it because the copy edits don't catch everything. And sometimes when you're up at 2 in the morning and you're still trying to write and your mind gets a little bit muddled, and sometimes when the copy editor is up at 2 in the morning and they're still trying to read and their mind's a little muddled, they skip right past that and it still makes it through. So, yeah, there are things, there are sometimes little mistakes, little whoopsies that make it through, but it's authors just, I mean, you learn to let it go because you can't, you learn that you can't fix it all. So
exactly.
I just hope that your audience doesn't notice.
Isn't that so true? This has just been really, really a great interview, and I'm sure that our listeners have found a lot of good information. I certainly did just listening to you and seeing what books come in. Do you have any closing thoughts that you would like to share with our listening audience?
I actually wanted to talk a little bit about expectations and realities that writers have when they're writing, because I'm not saying it to dash hopes, I'm just saying it to give a dash of reality of what actually happens. Because a lot of times when writers go into writing a book, they think, oh, this is going to be the greatest book, and the kids will never want to read any other book but mine, and they are going to get this out of the book, they're going to get this particular message out of the book, and they are just going to agree with me and love it all. And that doesn't happen. That never happens. Because what happens is you have these kids that read these books. They love books. The kids that are reading, they love them. And they are going to devour them, and they are going to keep reading other books, which is great for you because maybe they're reading someone else's book. They're going to get to yours. But you can't live with the thought of, oh, they're going to read my book and only my book, because there's so many books out there. They're just going to try and absorb them all, and I love that. You also can't expect them to get the message that you want out of the book. You're dealing with someone's different personality, a different mind. They may get a different message out of your book, and that's fine. Not everyone thinks about things the same way, and words have so many interpretations. And again, also, they're not going to agree with everything you say. They're not going to find every joke you put funny. They're not going to love all your characters the way you love your characters, because you're dealing with strong opinions. You're dealing with an audience that's just getting to express what they believe, and they're getting to know themselves, and that's the easiest way for them to do it, to say, you know, I love this character, I don't like this character, I hated when this happened, and that's going to happen, and that's fine. And your audience may let you know that. They may send you emails, hey, I love this, but why did this happen? And that is totally fine, because they have their own opinions, and they're developing their minds, and that is great. You want them to ask these questions. You want them to express themselves. And then one last thing, be careful with cultural references. Be careful with $5 words. You may lose some of your audience with that because, again, you're working with a little bit younger sometimes. You get tweens reading these books. And a lot of jokes that adults think are funny, teens don't get. They don't think are funny. And a lot of words you use, teens are going to stumble over them or they're going to completely ignore them. So if you're doing that to try and enhance their vocabulary, just leave it out.
You know, it just reminds me when my grandchildren come to visit, and we've got a couple of generations in between here, and you're right, some of the things I think funny, they just give me the funniest look, like, what's with her? And then they could be giggling about something, and I'm looking, and I'm thinking, now, what did I miss?
Exactly. And so that's why you can't take it personally if they don't see things the exact same way you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. You want them to have their own opinion about things.
Oh, no kidding. So, Joe, tell our audience your website address, please.
My website address is www.joewhittemore, that's JoeWhittemore.com.
Great. And I went to your website, and you not only have information about your book, but you have a lot of information for writing and writers and a lot of resources, which is really great. And I just really encourage the listening audience to go to your website and definitely check out your books, but also check out all the other information you have. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Gosh, this has been great, and I know that our listening audience just have gotten so much information from you.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here, and congratulations to you guys on your anniversary.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. We'll be back on the air November 15th, 2007, when our topic will be Frugal Book Promotion, and our guest who will be joining us is Carolyn Howard Johnson. You can learn more about all our guests on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. We would love to hear from you about tonight's show. Please send us your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated and Loving Healing Press.
And for Reader Views, this is Irene Watson in Austin, Texas, saying good night.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, saying good night to you all.